We are starting our fourth class of Kabbalah of Sfirot. We have studied Sfira of Chochmah and Binah during our last class, and we spoke about these two important parts of our intellectual process. We were speaking about Chochmah as our ability to come up with new ideas, creativity, as well as our ability to listen to someone else and to learn something from an external source. And Binah is our ability to process this information, to analyze it, to see if our brilliant new idea even makes sense, then to see how to implement it. And Chochmah in Kabbalah is compared to a dot, because it is a compressed version of an idea, and Binah is compared to a process of expansion of this dot. And we spoke how both of them are needed. If a person does not have one of these two, he for sure won't be able to think properly. But having said that, every person is usually better at one of them. There are people who are better at their chokhmah, which means they are creative, they come up with new ideas, they brainstorm. And then there are people who are better at binah, which means they analyze things in a disciplined manner, and they think things through. They are usually very attentive to detail, and they're usually much better at implementing these ideas. And we spoke about our right and left brain, that physiologically our brain has two compartments, two halves, and both of these halves are taking part in our thinking process, just in a different way. So between Chochmah and Binah, seems like we have everything what is required for thinking. So Chochmah and Binah, two parts of our thinking process, and between them two, we are done learning about our intellectual capacities. I want to ask you a question. What else do you think is needed besides for Chochmah and Binah? Well, if you are living in intellectual academic world, if you are a philosopher, then nothing. The Lubavitcher Rebbe once had a person coming to him and asking him questions about Hasidic teachings, and he was referring to these Hasidic teachings as they were speaking in English, using a term Hasidic philosophy. In our civilization, any school of thought that deals with existential issues, anything that speaks about spiritual things, is often referred to as philosophy. So in the Jewish world and the non-Jewish world, very often people refer to Hasidic teachings as Hasidic philosophy. So this person was asking the Rebbe, what does he think about Hasidic philosophy? And the Rebbe answered, I do not believe in philosophy, period. Because I only believe in ideas that have an effect on people's lives. We very often read books, hear lectures, and then when we absorbed this information, we became smarter. We think that we are done. And from the perspective of the secular world that we live in, usually academically speaking, yes, you are done, because you've accomplished what it's meant to help you accomplish. According to the Torah, you are far from done. Why? Because the Torah is insisting that no idea is needed in this world unless it has a relevant, practical application. If you studied any subject, if you read any book, if you listened to any lecture, and you did not see how it relates to your life, you wasted your time. We don't believe in philosophy. In the world around us, philosophy is usually a process of thinking which is purely scholastic, which is purely academic. You know that Aristotle once was caught by his students doing something extremely inappropriate, even by those standards of those days. And they asked him, the greatest teacher of all teachers, Aristotle, is involved in such an inappropriate act. How could you do that? He told them, when I'm teaching you in my class, I'm Aristotle the teacher. When I'm at my home, I'm Aristotle the person. That's it. My classes don't have to have any effect on me. And they say that there was once a professor of psychology who was teaching his students how to relate to others and how to understand others and how to be relatable. But he was known on a personal level as a very nasty person. He had a personality that his students couldn't stand. So once they asked him about it and he said, listen, I'm teaching you psychology and you are telling me that I don't represent what I'm teaching. In the room next door to me, there's a different professor who is teaching you geometry. Did you ever ask him why he is not a triangle? If he's not a triangle, then why do you expect me to be what I'm teaching? And from the non-Jewish perspective, this claim has some validity. From our viewpoint, Chochmah and Binah are teaching us how to think. Chochmah and Binah are allowing us to have an idea and to develop an idea, to learn an idea. But then comes a third stage, and this third stage is probably the most important. I want to ask you a question. What do you think is maturity? We all speak about someone being very mature or someone being immature. Or you look at a teenager and you say, wow, he matured a lot over past few years. We use this word maturity quite often. What is it? What is maturity? Let's see. What is the difference between a mature person and an immature person? If I would ask you, you're looking at two people. One of them is definitely very mature. The other one is definitely very immature. And you, because of their level of maturity, have certain expectations of them. So tell me, what is the difference between your expectations of a mature person compared to your expectation of an immature person? Color of the beard. Okay, what if they shave? So here we go. First of all, ability to control their emotions. Okay, very good. What else? I would say that immature people are shallow in their understanding or shallow in their emotions. I would say that immature people are overreacting. And this goes to your point of ability to control their emotions. I would say that immature people are getting consumed by one idea and they forget about everything else. They drop everything else. They are not able to see a bigger picture and balance different things. And because of that, they're not able to perceive things in context. So if I would have to define maturity, I would say that maturity is our ability of deep internalization. Maturity is our ability to internalize something on a deep level. And I also have to tell you that maturity could be intellectual and maturity could be emotional. I have seen people who are very mature intellectually, but on an emotional level, they're just babies. And I've seen the other way around. I've seen people who are very mature on their emotional level, but they're not mature intellectually. I will tell you now a story that happened in front of my eyes that describes exactly this point. I have a friend and a colleague whose name is Rabbi Mendy Kunin. And right now he has his own Chabad house in one of the suburbs of Los Angeles in California. But back then, he was a rabbi of UCLA on campus at Westwood. And I, many years ago, was helping him out there. Back then, many campuses across the U.S. were fighting smoking. They all had their anti-smoking campaigns, and they had various community leaders get up and deliver lectures, speeches. They held rallies to fight smoking. And they call up Rabbi Mendy Kunin and they ask him to take part in one of these rallies and to deliver a lecture about the harms of smoking. And he was forced to say yes. He couldn't say no. When they called him, they didn't know one thing about him, though. He was a chain smoker. He couldn't say no, I'm not going to do it, because it would look really bad for him that everybody else is speaking, every other community leader on campus is speaking and he is not. And he couldn't say yes because he's smoking himself. What should he do? So he decided that he is going to get up there and say that I'm still struggling with it myself. I'm still smoking myself. But I want to share with you what I know about the dangers of smoking, and together with you, I'll try to work on this. He decided to be perfectly honest. When you don't know what to say, the best advice is to be honest. Usually it's the best thing. So guess what? He prepares an entire presentation about the dangers of smoking. He consults the doctors that he knows, gets from them different charts and diagrams that he's going to display during his presentation. And he learns about the terrible consequences of smoking and what happens to your lungs and what happens to all other parts of your body and how it could have a very bad effect on your heart and on your every other internal organ. And he really put himself into preparing this presentation. And then he delivers this presentation with the very introduction which I told you. He said that he's still smoking and he is just working on quitting smoking. And then he got off the stage after this presentation and never took a cigarette in his mouth again in his life till this very day. And this story is already more than 20 years old. I told you this story. This is da'at, ability to internalize something. I want to ask you a question. Do you think Rabbi Kunin discovered some new information while he was preparing for this lecture? I don't think so. I think he knew perfectly well that smoking is bad for your lungs and for your heart. I think he knew about all the dangers of smoking. You know why? Because everybody, including his own wife, have told it to him a million times. And he probably also saw all these ads everywhere, and he read all these articles everywhere, and I'm sure he heard it his entire smoking career. So one second, so he knew all this. Why is it that till that moment, this knowledge had no effect on him? And then after he was working on this presentation, suddenly it had an effect on him. What happened? The answer is da'at. Da'at is our ability to internalize the information that we already have. Make theoretical information practical. Turn our academic scholastic achievements into our real life achievements. And how do we do that? That's a million-dollar question. Because of all these three stages, Chokhmah, Binah, and Da'at, Da'at probably requires the most effort. Why? Because first of all, it is the effort of regurgitating the same information over and over. I'm not finding out anything new here. I'm just thinking it over again and again. I'm dwelling on something. I'm coming back to the same facts, and I'm coming back to the same idea, same information. So on one hand, it just coming back to it again and again, but on the other hand, it's something that I have to force myself to make practical for myself. This is why visualization is an important part of da'at. Seeing practical examples is an important part of da'at. When my children were going to driving school before they got their license, they had this guy coming over to them and telling them about all the dangers of drunk driving and all the dangers of texting while you are driving and all of these terrible things that could happen to you if you don't obey the laws and if you speed and everything else. They listen to this lecture and they all sat through it, and I'm sure they were nodding their heads and they were listening. Maybe some of them were falling asleep in the middle. But then they made every single one of these teenagers watch videos, real life videos of accidents. If you ask me, I think these videos were a little too gruesome to be shown to these teenagers. You know what? I was actually thinking that maybe different segments of population have different standards. And perhaps in the non-Jewish world, where every kid and every teenager is watching movies where they have murders and where people get injured all the time, in the Jewish Orthodox community, kids don't watch these things. Also, in the non-Jewish world, people read books and stories which are much more gruesome. In the community where my kids grew up in, they don't do that. So probably for the secular community, this video was fine. For the Jewish Orthodox community, it was really too much. But they don't make different videos for driving schools of Jewish Orthodox community. So my kids had to sit through the same videos like everybody else. It did have very strong emotional impact on them, but this is what is required for that. I would appreciate if they would have taken it down a couple notches, if it wouldn't be as graphic or as harrowing, but probably something along those lines would be necessary for children who are about to get their driver's license to understand the responsibility that comes together with driving. This is that. So that is internalization. And as I mentioned, internalization can be on an intellectual level and it could be on an emotional level. This is only internalization on an intellectual level. We are only talking about internalizing what we understood, what we know. Internalization on an emotional level will be discussed later when we're going to be talking about our emotions. So this is only intellectual maturity. So I hear something interesting. And now what? Very often I notice that for people who are just getting familiarized with Judaism, they have a difficulty with this point. Because we are taught in our schools, universities, by our media, we are taught to be preoccupied with consumption of new information. We are information junkies. I want to know what's going on. I want to read the news. I want to hear what's going on with my friends. I want to study the subjects that I like. I'm in a constant pursuit of acquiring wealth of information, which is great. What we are not taught, though, is that. And that comes with coming back and regurgitating and reviewing this information again and again and again. And this is why in Hasidic tradition, for example, there is a custom of farbrengens. There are classes. This is when you learn the new stuff. And a farbrengen is a more of informal gathering where people come and they talk. They don't learn anything new. They don't even discuss things on intellectual level. They talk about the things that they know already. And that's why classes are much more controlled. If I'm a good teacher, I can always prepare a good class, and sometimes going to be a little better, a little worse, but it's going to be an okay class, and you can always know what to expect. Classes take a specific set amount of time, and you cover a specific set amount of information. That's what classes are. Farbrengens don't work this way. Farbrengens, a lot of times, are spontaneous. A lot of times, they are more successful, which means you have internalized something which you have not internalized before. Sometimes they're just a waste of time. Why? It just didn't hit off. I don't know why. Because da'at is very personal for everyone. Because I internalize things in a very different way than you and everyone else. So for one person, it could be a good farbringen, and for another person, it could be a very bad farbringen. Just last night, me and my son were in New York. We were at the conference of Shluchim. We had this huge banquet, which you probably saw online. And then afterwards, there's usually a farbringen. And I was very tired. I was just really tired. And I told my son, listen, let's just go see what's going on. We'll see what's going on. If it's going to be anything good, we'll stay. But generally speaking, farbringens usually, when they are smaller, and these large farbringens, they usually don't work this well. And what happens in Crown Heights after this large banquet, people kind of break up into small farbringens in various places. In 770, in various places, there was one other farbringen at the Shluchim office. There were different places where there were different farbringens, but they're still large. It's thousands of people. So I told my son, let's go see what's going on, but we'll just peek in. If it's not something that is worth staying for, I would just rather go to sleep. We peeked in, and guess what? We stayed there till 3 a.m. Now you understand why I'm so tired today. It was a very good farbringen, to my own surprise. And my son really appreciated it too. And in order to have that, you need to revisit and revisit the same ideas over and over. And people who are not used to it, they are coming to farbringen, and they have a very understandable complaint. They're like, I heard all this already. He's just bringing a different example for the same idea, which we already know. So why am I sitting here? What am I doing here? He is just explaining the same thing from a different angle. I already understood it. What's the point? If all you are trying to do is understand something on an academic level, then you're wasting your time. But Judaism, and specifically Hasidic tradition, is not about that. If there is an idea which does not have a practical application, then it might as well not exist. This is why, if you want, we could say that is the justification of Chochmah and Bina's existence, as far as Jewish viewpoint is concerned. And then, once I have internalized something, this information is becoming a part of my passive knowledge. What does it mean? It means it's becoming obvious to me. I don't have to think about it anymore. I don't have to revisit it anymore. If I'm going to ask you how much is 2 plus 2, you won't have to get out your hand and start counting fingers. You won't have to go back to apples. 2 apples on this side and 2 apples on that side. Let's count them now. I hope you don't do that. Why is it? Because it's your passive information. I can say, Mazel Tov, you have internalized 2 plus 2. 2 plus 2 for you is on level of da'at. Now, you'll say, well, 2 plus 2 is a pretty easy information to internalize. That's correct. Unless you are a Jew who is asked, how much is 2 plus 2? And you ask in return, are we buying or selling? So then, let's look at something more complex. The idea that murdering another human being is a bad thing, I hope it's something that we all have internalized. Well, guess what? There are plenty of people around this planet that have not internalized it, and maybe even will argue with you that it's not true. Our soldiers that have to go fight wars come back from the war and they have to go to therapy because they killed people. Why? Because in their world, killing someone is a terrible thing. They are fighting, though, very often those for whom killing another human being is a mitzvah. You know, they come back home to their own kids, to their own wife, and they are proudly saying, today I murdered X amount of infidels or X amount of whoever it is. So there are things that we have internalized, thank God, but others have not. I'll bring you another example. If you will see an Orthodox family walking somewhere on the street, and a little boy or a little girl sees something for sale that they want. There's a candy being sold. Mommy, I want this candy. The mommy is going to say, You had enough sugar already for today. I'm not going to buy this candy to you. What happens next? I still want it. I want it. I want it. A tantrum, screaming, kicking legs, jumping up and down. I want, I want, I want. I've seen it. I'm sure none of your kids have ever done that, but other kids have. The mother is going to say, you know what? I don't have my wallet on me. I cannot buy it for you. What do you think is going to happen? Same tantrum. I want it. I want it. I want it. No, blah, 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 blah. A mother is going to say, you know what? Our doctor, our dentist is not allowing us to have it. The result is going to be the same. Now, this is a Jewish Orthodox family. If the same mother, and take my word for it, if you haven't noticed it yourself, watch families, and I can guarantee you that's going to be the result. The same mother is going to tell the same child, no, we cannot buy it. This candy is not kosher. No tantrum, no yelling, no screaming, no kicking. The matter is forgotten. Why? Because this kid has internalized that non-kosher food is something out of our realm. It is outside of our realm. We don't deal with it. We don't touch it. We don't eat it. We don't even look at it. There is no negotiation. Sugar, there is negotiation. Money, there's for sure negotiation. Doctors, you bet there are negotiations. This candy is not kosher. No objections. Moving on. This is the difference between something which you have internalized and something which you have not internalized. So for this kid, the fact that we don't eat things which are not kosher is passive information in the back of his head. Just like 2 + 2 = 4, just like you cannot murder. It's just one of these things sitting there. By any dot is achieved only by revisiting and regurgitating and repeating the same information over and over again and discussing it from different angles and bringing different examples and supporting it through the surroundings, having other people talk about it, community, and this is the only way to do it. It's difficult. That requires more effort than Chochmah and Bina, much more. It's the hardest part. And once something is becoming a part of our passive data, it's the passive information which we always have stored in our heads, now it's always there and it's easily accessible, and that allows me to understand things in context. You see, if I receive an email about a wealthy prince from Nigeria who left me $1 million inheritance, I will get very excited. I will call the number right away. I'll give them all of my information. I will dream about these $1 million. Why? Because it's the first email of this kind I've ever received. And I wasn't even aware of any fraud that it could be possibly associated with. And that's why I am acting upon it. Now, if I have already received 100 or probably 1,000 or more likely 1 million of these emails in the past, and if all of my neighbors have received these emails, and if I hear about all of this online fraud which is going on, then what is going on? I can appreciate this email in this context. I have a background information that I'm building on this new coming information on top of. I can promise you, from now on, I'm not going to be excited about this email from a Nigerian prince. Just, I might be excited about a lot of things in the world, not this one. That is allowing me to perceive the new information using the background that I already have. If I would not have this background information on level of that, I would not have it so easily accessible, and I would not be able to use it as a context. If I have to count over 2 + 2 every single time, if whenever I do any math problem, I have to look at my hand and start counting fingers, then whenever a new math problem comes, I cannot perceive it on the background of knowing that 2 + 2 = 4. But if I have this information that 2 plus 2 is 4 as this passive data, which I have, and by the way, according to some English word, data comes from the word dot. If I have this dot data in my head, then I don't need to actively revisit it. It's there and becomes the context of everything new I learned. So if somebody gets me mad and I know on the level of dot that murdering people is a bad idea, then I'm not going to think of taking a knife and stabbing him or pulling out a gun and shooting him. But if there are people who grew up without being raised in the environment that was telling them that murdering is bad, maybe somebody will tell them, you know what, killing someone else is not a good idea. I'm just saying. You know, there were philosophers who wrote that it's not suggested. You know, their children gonna cry if you kill them. He'll say, yeah, it's a nice idea. I'll think about it at night when I'll go to sleep. But then when somebody's gonna get him mad, he's gonna pull out a gun and shoot him. Why? It's not the passive information that he's building everything else on. And this is also the reason why that is allowing us not to jump from one extreme to the other. Because if I have this passive information in the back of my head, it is always anchoring me. I just now heard a new idea. I'm thinking about it. It's something interesting. But you know what? I have 5 other ideas about this issue that I need to correlate this with. And they are already stored in my passive baggage. So they are already part of me. They're already part of my life. This new idea has to be built on them. So I hear this new thought before I'm becoming totally consumed by it. I need to correlate it to what I have already in my possession, to my dot. If I don't have this dot, then I don't have anything to correlate it with. I have nothing else to build it on. So I'm all consumed by this new thought. This is called immaturity. Immaturity is jumping into an idea head first. Immaturity is not having a context of how I see things. And you said that maturity is experience. It's a very important part. Why? Because most of the time, our dot comes from experience. If I learned that 2 plus 2 is 4, and I just found out about it yesterday, and I was a good student, I actually counted my fingers, and I found out that 2 plus 2 is 4, and then I took the 2 apples and 2 apples, and I counted. That's great. How do I make sure that now this information, 2 plus 2 is 4, is going to become part of my da'at? If I will have to go out on the street and use this knowledge, I will have to count how many dollars do I need to pay for something at the local corner store. I will need to count how many chairs do I need to set up around this table. I will need to count how many cans of Coke I need to buy for all of us here. So I will have to use this. That's going to be my experience. So with the experience of counting 2 plus 2, I will acquire that of 2 plus 2 being 4. So this is why at Farbrengens, they usually speak about practical applications of the ideas that we learned, because this is the second best to having a first-hand life experience. If I know of my friend, my neighbor, my teacher, my relative who went through a specific experience, okay, I didn't go through it myself, but that's second best to having an experience on my own. So yes, experience is an important part, because experience makes theoretical knowledge practical. And we spoke with you that the 10 sefirot are broken up into intellectual, emotional, and executive. And after the 3 intellectual sefirot come 6 emotional sefirot. And that is the connection between them. That is what connects my intellect to my emotions. Why? Because if I understand something only on academic, scholastic level, it will evoke no emotions from me whatsoever. If I know that killing people is bad, I read about it in the book. The Torah tells us that Cain killed Abel, and it was a pretty bad thing. I read about it, I understand it, and I close the book and go in my merry way. It's one thing. Now, think about a person who has witnessed a murder. Think about a person who, God forbid, had somebody murdered who he knows. For him, this information is going to have an emotional appeal. Why? Because this experience made this academic knowledge be brought to da'at, practical knowledge. So da'at is what is connecting my intellect with my emotions. And as you see on this chart, we have chokhmah on the right, bina on the left, and we spoke about them being on two sides over here, and that is in the middle. Why? Because even though the structure is built first chokhmah, then bina, and then da'at, in other words, you cannot get from chokhmah to da'at without bina, that's just how it is, but da'at is the middle column, because da'at is really in between chokhmah and bina. That is synthesis of chokhmah and bina. You cannot write them in a straight line, first chokhmah, then bina, then da'at, because even though chronologically that's how it has to follow, but when you look at da'at, da'at does not have more of bina than chokhmah. Da'at has both of them equally, and that's why it is in the middle. And da'at is the reflection of both of them together. And during our next classes, we are going to look at our emotional sferot. We're going to find out how that then affects our feelings, and how our feelings in turn affect our actions.